Welcome to the Bowers & Wilkins webcast with your hosts, Peter Madueno and Seth Snyder.
Welcome to the Bowers & Wilkins podcast. As always, I'm Pete Madueno. With me, Seth Snyder. How you doing today, Seth?
What's up, Pete? How's it going?
It's going great. Very exciting about the show today. Why don't you tell a little about who we talked to and what we did?
This was a lot of fun. We got to talk to Leslie Ann Jones. She is a recording engineer at Skywalker Sound, and she has mastered just countless films, video games, music. She does a ton of work in the classical space. Really interesting to get her insights on Bowers & Wilkins speakers, audio, high res, music in general. I mean, it's really cool. Awesome. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a fantastic interview, and joining with you is Eric. So Eric, take it off.
So joining us on the call today is Leslie Ann Jones, who works at Skywalker Sound. How you doing, Leslie?
I'm great, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's the weather like out there in California?
You know, I'm in Northern California. I live in Oakland, and like everybody else, I'm working from home, and it's pretty nice. You know, the usual June gloom, as they call it, in the summer. It's nice.
Excellent. So I obviously know what you do. Seth does, Pete does, but for those that are listening right now, they may not know what you do. So could you kind of give us a quick little intro?
Sure. I have two jobs, really. I'm the director of music recording and scoring at Skywalker Sound. And basically, we have a large scoring stage that's used to record music for film and TV and video games. But we also do a lot of classical music recording, a lot of pop and rock records, you know, things that don't have anything to do with any visual component. So I run that stage, but I'm also a Grammy-winning recording engineer and record producer. So that's my day job.
That's awesome. Love it. Have you been to the studio recently, or have you just been working from home this entire time?
No, we kind of shut down the middle of March, and so I really have not been back to work since then.
Wow.
So I've been, you know, spending time. I'm in the middle of a couple of projects and finished one in May and at home. And then I'm editing another project that I'm working on, which is the complete works of Beethoven for piano and cello. So I'm in the middle of editing that at home.
That's beautiful. So one of the things at Bowers & Wilkins that we often talk about is true sound. And we kind of define it as the ability to convince the listener that the sounds that they are hearing are the real sounds, they're the true sound. And in that sense, that's what puts you closer to the actual performance. So how would you define true sound? Like what makes true sound, and why is it important?
Well, it's interesting because everyone has their own way of kind of, I don't want to say branding, but kind of sort of defining what that is. And, you know, you guys use true sound I think, yes, we all strive to have the audience, the consumers, the people who buy the music that we work so hard on, to hear it in the best possible light it can be. And that's why I've been a big proponent for many, many years on high resolution audio, both recording in high res and also people being able to play back in high res and download in high res, because the higher the resolution that you can listen to, the closer you will get to the sound that we hear in the studio. And high resolution is really defined as anything better than CD quality. And CD quality is 44.1 kilohertz sampling rate with a bit rate of 16. So anything higher than that is considered high res, but those of us that are professionals in the business really start thinking about high res at 2496 and above, or anything in the DSD realm.
Hey, Leslie, a question for you, because you've, I don't know if you know this, but you have entered into the wolf's den as far as gearheads are concerned with the three of us. So I just wanted to pick your brain on what you use at home, and when you are listening to, like you said, in high res, like what do you use to play back? Like what's your ideal experience since you're not in the studio? What are you using at your residence or at the moment?
Well, at home, I have a couple of different systems. I have a 5-1 Bowers and Wilkins 703 system, and with an Onkyo receiver and an Oppo Blu-ray player. And usually when I listen to high res, I might put it on a, you know, flash drive or something, and
gotcha,
and pop it into the Onkyo. I'm a Mac person, and a lot of hi-fi equipment is not Mac friendly. So, and particularly the older equipment that I have doesn't have, like, it won't play AirPlay or anything like that, or so I end up just putting things on a flash drive if I want to hear them, or if it's something I'm working on, for instance, that my mastering engineer has sent me, then I'll just play it off my laptop, because I can play 2496 and just play it analog.
Yeah, that's a question that I had for you. I lived in New York for a while, and I had a couple of buddies who worked in small recording studios, and they were constantly moving tracks that they were working on from system to system, whether it be in their car or from the studio they worked in or a pair of headphones. What's the advantage from your profession on listening to things in multiple systems? Is there something that we should know on that front? Like why is it important to listen on multiple systems while you're recording?
Well, we like to listen on multiple systems to make sure that there isn't anything missing, you know. Low end, for instance, the smaller the speaker, the less low end you have. So it would be important when I'm mixing in the studio, for instance, we have B&W 802s, and we also have smaller speakers that we use, and I can switch back and forth between them. In the old days, people used to do mixes, and then some studios had FM transmitters or AM transmitters, and you could go out to your car and tune into whatever frequency the transmitter was transmitting at and hear what it sounded like in your car off the radio. So it's the same concept, you know, but now, of course, people are consuming their music through streaming and through downloads, and you know, streaming is compressed. So you want to make sure that whatever mix you're doing is not going to lose anything in the translation. Not everybody has the ability to listen to high res. And, you know, most people listen what I call passive listening, recreational listening. Well, they'll just, you know, turn on the playlist or, you know, Pandora, Spotify, or Tidal, and just play music and not really pay attention to it, as opposed to active listening, which is sitting in front of the speakers, you know, and really kind of absorbing what it is you're hearing.
Yeah, that makes sense. It is interesting. I used to be much more of a passive listener until I got, you know, the ability to play back in high resolution. And then now all of a sudden, while I'm working, the work sometimes gets distracted, and I have to bring myself back in every once in a while.
You had asked what else I have. I mean, I have a myriad of different things. And nothing is necessarily connected, but like I have, I keep mentioning you guys because I really like your product. But I have T1, T7,
Yeah, T7, the little Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, the T7, I've got that in my bedroom. I have, you know, another small stereo in my living room, which is primarily for passive listening, and I can stream from that as well as playing a CD. You know, when I moved a couple of years ago, I ended up getting, I had playback systems that I end up getting rid of because in the end I listen to CDs and I stream either, you know, high res or through Apple Music. So I discovered that that was really all I needed for that one system. And then in the kitchen, I've got a Sonos. Which I generally use for CNN. So that's kind of what I've got.
Sure. No, that's awesome. Why, not to keep plugging our own brand, but that's why they're signing our checks, so to speak. So, but why do you choose Bowers & Wilkins 800 series, both at work and at home? What is it about our sound that grips you and chooses you and makes you choose to continue to invest in our products?
Well, you know, at Skywalker, when I first got there, we had a several large speaker systems. We had a system in the wall and the soffit above the window, which is a Allen Sides Oceanway system, which was a left center right speaker system. And then we also had Wilson Watt 5 puppies, left center and right. And then for the classical, and that was for film. And then for classical, we had a pair of 801 Matrix. And we had to keep changing the speakers depending on whether we were doing something that required film surround, which is left, center, and right, or whether we wanted stereo. And at some point, we just got tired of changing speakers all the time and started looking at what else was available out there. You know, it's hard when you have a recording studio because you have to please a lot of different clients. And in the case of our studio, we have a lot of different kinds of music that we work with and a lot of different engineers and producers. So Sean Murphy, who's a very well-known scoring mixer, does all of John Williams' work, among others. He and I have been friends for a long time, and this was many, many years ago, and he recommended that we look at the B&W 802s because other studios that our clients were working in also had them. And you know, that's always a good thing when you have other people traveling to different studios. I think at this time, Sony in New York was still open, their classical mastering facilities, and Abbey Road, a lot of people had them. And so we had them brought in, and they worked out really, really well in terms of sound. We added a low frequency extension in our control room because we have a console that blocks a bit of the low frequency sound, and our control room tends to eat up some low end. So we have the 802s in a left, center, right, and then underneath is the ASW 4000, which is the subwoofer basically, but we use it as a low frequency extension. So it becomes one complete unit. And then when we are doing film mixing or anything that requires a dot one, that goes into the center LFE speaker. And that is not only a bass extension for the center speaker, but it becomes the LFE.
Oh, that's neat. It's playing double duty. That's really cool.
Yeah, as well. And so we ended up getting a five-channel system of that. So we have left, center, right, and we have left surround and right surround.
So Leslie, Eric here. So I've been in a lot of studios, you know, in my 20 years at Bowers, but I got to be honest with you, that control room is just absolutely spectacular. The acoustics in the space, just you were gracious enough to let me sit in the master chair at the actual control, and I was just like when you I forget the track that you played, but it was just one of those moments, you know, that you'll never forget in your life. It was absolutely spectacular.
Serious jealousy over here, Eric.
Yeah, no, sorry about that.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, I feel very lucky that I ended up at Skywalker, and it's just a wonderful room to work in. And you know, they're, of course, the company is very supportive of the work that we do, and so that's been really great.
That's excellent. So I want to dive in real quick with film score, because I'm a huge fan of film scores. Like, what is your approach when you're doing a score for a documentary, a film, or even a video game? Because I noticed on kind of your list of things that you've mastered over the years and recorded over the years, there's quite a few video games on there. What is, like, your approach? How do you, like, get the emotionality out of a motion picture or a video game or a documentary?
Well, it really doesn't start with me. It starts with the composer and what's written. And, you know, it's kind of their job to bring out the emotion of a particular scene. And it's my job to try and capture that emotion so that it gets translated when you listen to it, either on the soundtrack CD or when you listen to it in a video game or in a movie theater or at home. So I think, you know, the first thing I try to do is always talk to the composer about what kind of sound they're looking for. Is it a lush sound? Is there a lot of brass? In the case of video game scores, there's always a lot of brass. Do they want a more high fidelity sound? Do they want a very punchy, bright kind of dynamic sound? And that in many ways informs the way I'll set the room up, the kind of microphones that I use, because then I have some idea of what it is they're going for. And that, you know, the great thing about Skywalker is the room itself, because we can adjust we have panels out in the room that we can adjust, so we can change the reverb time of the room from very long to very short or anywhere in between. So the room itself becomes a tool, just like different microphones are. And that, I think, is what makes recording it Skywalker so unique. And so that's, you know, kind of what I do. And sometimes I mix things that I don't record. And but most of the times I record things that I mix as well.
Excellent. So can you tell us anything that you're working on right now? Anything cool that you're working on, or anything that cool that you've worked on in the past year or so that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I mentioned this Beethoven piano cello project I'm working on with a cellist, Jennifer Klotzel, and pianist Robert Koenig, and it's the complete works of Beethoven for piano and cello. And so we're kind of in the middle of that now. The recording was, you know, scheduled for a couple of days here and there, and we've had to put recording off now because of the pandemic. I just finished, and it will be released in the beginning of August, an immersive project for the U.S. Army Field Band. And that was a very interesting project. Dan Mercurio produced that, and Lieutenant Colonel Jim Keane is the conductor, and musical director of the band, and it's a album of all kind of film scores. That it's called Soundtrack of the American Soldier, and it really is film scores that have something to do with the military. And it was just, it was a fantastic project because we planned it for immersive, which, you know, immersive can be considered surround 5.1, but most of us, again, that think about immersive, think about it as a 7.1.2 or a 5.1.4. And that's, right. You know, those numbers are floor speakers. So in the case of this record, it's 5.1.4. So it's five floor speakers, one subwoofer, and four height speakers for Atmos. And we actually planned the recording so that it would be recorded in Atmos and or in that style of immersive. So the way all the microphones were placed, the way the band was placed, the way the chorus was placed, pretty much the microphones didn't move that much at all. We moved the players around based on what Dan, the producer, and Colonel Keane felt were the most important things to be representative in the sound space. And it was just, it was a fantastic experiment that ended up being exactly what we hoped it would be. So when I went to remix it, really, everything was kind of already placed where it was supposed to be placed. And it was just a matter of refining the balances, making things a little louder or softer. And so that's coming out the beginning of August. It's really a terrific record. It'll be out in immersive and 5.1 and stereo.
That's so cool. I think you actually, and I meant to tell you this, I think you actually sent me a small sample of one of the cuts.
I might have.
So I think it was for the American Sniper cut. Uh-huh. And I played that on our Bowers and Wilkins Reference Theater in our Experience Center in Boston. And oh my goodness, was it ridiculous. Absolutely amazing. So job well done.
Thank you.
I really appreciated that.
Yeah, that's the cut with two drummers, which was interesting. And did I send you the 5.1.4 or just the 5.1?
Just the 5.1. I think we have trouble getting the Atmos.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we had a mastered version of the 5.1.4 yet, but
it's
the U.S. Army Field Band and its Soundtrack of the American Soldier, and I'm really proud of it. I think it's and it's amazing how great the musicians are, you know. And I think that was Colonel Keane's really his big desire about doing a record like this was to kind of show the world-class musicians that are in the Army Field Band and the fact that these players could play with anybody. They just choose to be in the Army.
Yeah.
And it was really a fantastic experience.
That's excellent. So I just got to let you know, we're definitely, when that comes out, Pete, Seth, and I will definitely pick that up, and we'll probably be using it as demo tracks for the next few years. So Leslie, I think that's all we have. Seth, you have anything else?
No, Leslie, this has just been awesome. Thank you so much for making the time to come and talk to us about what you do and how our products help you do what you do and some of the things that's coming down the pike from you guys. I mean, it really is a pleasure to talk to someone who is, you know, responsible for bringing me personally all the content and the great just emotional experiences you've delivered sonically over the years. So I really appreciate the hard work that you do, and it's just a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been great to do the podcast, and I hope everybody stays safe and, you know, makes it through this.
You as well, Leslie. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thank you again for listening to the Bowers & Wilkins podcast. A special thank you to Eric McBride and Leslie Ann Jones for joining us today. Have a great day.